As many of you know, there's a bit of a mountain pine beetle situation in British Columbia right now. So mountain pine beetle is quickly becoming one of the most destructive forest predators in all of North America. British Columbia, Ministry of Forest and Range, have reported by the end of the season in 2006 that approximately 9.2 million hectares of lodgepole pine trees have been killed by mountain pine beetle. This is now currently the largest mountain pine beetle outbreak in recorded history. So with this large epidemic occurring, there is certainly enough beetle pressure on the landscape to kill just about any lodgepole pine tree that the beetles come across. But what about the trees that aren't being killed? So this is kind of the question that is kind of the overlying question over my research. So to get at this question, I'm looking at different progeny trials with genetic families that are in a randomized complete block design within the site. And the families come from different local and non-local provinces throughout British Columbia. So my objective is to determine and compare defense characteristics of 49 tree families, the 49 tree families that come from those local and non-local provinces. So the first defense characteristic that I have identified and I'm looking at is lesion growth, which is basically the tree's ability to stop blue-staining fungus growth throughout the tree. The next defense characteristic that I'm looking at are the secondary metabolites, specifically the constitutive and induced terpenoid levels within the tree. And for the purposes of today's talk, I'm going to be talking specifically about Delta-3 carrying because of its biological significance in tree defense to invading insect predators. And I'm going to talk about it at a constitutive level, which is basically when the beetle is first attacking the tree, the chemicals that it faces when it's trying to first colonize the tree. And then at the induced level, which is what it faces over time when it's trying to reproduce as well as to survive in the tree. And then the difference between those as well. So to collect my constitutive chemistry, I went out into the field where my sites were, my trees, and I took a bark punch of phloem and bark out of the tree and froze it on dry ice in the field and then took it back to a minus 80 degree freezer until it was processed later. Then at that time, the tree was also inoculated with blue stain fungus from one of these culture plates that you see here. And then 7 days later, I came back out to the sites and I cut around the original inoculation point and pulled back the bark and the phloem, and I measured the lesion in centimeters. And then at that time as well, I took another bark punch for the induced chemistry. Now these samples of phloem were processed using a GC-FID. And I'll show you some of the results. So I'm going to be showing a few figures that are similar to this one, so I'll kind of just describe to you real quick how they are set up here. So as you can see down here, I have my genetic families. These are all those local and non-local provenance families that I was talking about before. And then on the y-axis, you can see that I have mean length in centimeters, plus or minus one standard error. And this is for lesion lengths at 7 days post-inoculation. So as you can see from the p-value here from the ANOVA that I ran, there's a significant difference between the families. Next thing I wanted to do was a means comparison procedure to see if there was differences between individual families. So when I ran that, you can see that there's a significant difference between one or two of the families. This figure is similar to that first one that I described. The only difference here is on the y-axis, you have mean in parts per million per gram of dry weight, plus or minus one standard error. And this is for the constitutive Delta-3 carrying, which I took that first day out in the field, so basically at time zero. And you can see there is a significant difference between families here. So once again, I took out the top five families and the low five families due to a means comparison procedure upon. And here, they broke out really nicely, with the top five families being significantly different than the low five families. And I wanted to point out here, you can see at the constitutive level that the highest family is right around about 3,000 parts per million. And I also wanted to point out, in the low five families here, you see family 1773 is here, and family 221 here in the high five families. Just keep those in mind for later, because those will appear again. So now this is the induced chemistry of Delta-3 carrying at the 7 days post-inoculation when I back out to the site. And you can see, once again, there's a significant difference between the families. So once again, I pulled out the top five families and the low five families and ran a means comparison procedure. And once again, they broke out really nicely with the top five families being significantly different than the low five families. Now you can see here at the induced rate 7 days later, the highest one is more like around 12 or 13,000. So you can see that there's a large increase in the amount of delta-3 carrying in these trees. As well as family 1773 is once again in the low five families, and family 221 is once again in the high five families. Now this is the difference between day 7 and day 0, which is the induced and constitutive. And once again, I have a significant p-value here for differences between the families. Pulled out the top five and the low five. And there are significant differences between many of these families. So there are heritable differences between families for lesion length at the time 7 days post-inoculation, as well as between families for delta-3 carrying at time 0 and 7, which was the constitutive and the induced times, as well as the difference between the times. So this kind of got me thinking that, okay, there are significant differences between these families for the two defensive characteristics that I described before. So I was wondering if there's a relationship between these two defensive characteristics. So I ran a regression between lesion length and the induced delta-3 carrying, and I found that there's not a significant correlation between these two. So I also ran a regression between the constitutive and the induced times to see if there was a correlation there, and I got a significant correlation with an R-squared value of 0.57. So there are family differences in lesion length and delta-3 carrying at the constitutive and the induced times. There does not appear to be a relationship between the two defensive characteristics that I described for this study. However, there is a positive relationship between the constitutive and the induced delta-3 carrying. I've tested many other terpenes in this similar fashion, ones that display unique qualities to the defense of lodgepole pine tree to mountain pine beetle, or as well as to the progression of mountain pine beetle in the lodgepole pine tree, such as like limonene and myrcene, beta pinene. Those are just a few of them that I've tested. They all show similar trends in the fact that they break out between the families. So there are significant differences between the families, but none of them appear to affect lesion growth. So while the single terpenes do not appear to affect lesion growth, there are still heritable differences between these two defensive characteristics. So hopefully with future data analysis, I will be able to determine that maybe if combinations of these terpenes affect lesion growth. Other future work that I'll be looking at is comparing these defensive characteristics with attack data that I have for the trees, as well as mortality, to see if these actual defensive characteristics make a difference in whether or not the tree lives or dies. I would like to thank the Ministry of Forests and Range for funding my project, and I appreciate the assistance in the field from quite a few people here. John Murphy, who totally helped me out with understanding how my plots were set up, Dr. Mike Carlson, Bonnie Lee, Bonnie Hogue, Marco Hernandez, Andrea Singh, Aaron Clark, Dr. Clive Dawson, Dave Dunn, Jeff Sliznick, and the UMBC Laugh Group, which is a group of entomologists we have at UMBC, which is the university that I'm at. And I'd like to give a special thanks to Drs. Dazine Huber, Brian Akama, Stefan Lindgren, Alvin Yanchuk, and Kimberly Wallen for really helping me understand my project a lot more. So I'll take any questions you guys have. Yeah.
Why did you single out three terpenes?
Well, I did that for, like, as in other papers I've read, the biological significance that has made an effect on invading insect predators into conifer trees. So I just looked at that one in particular. I mean, I could have done, like, myrcene for its aggregation effects, or, you know, beta pinene just because of it's, like, a huge terpene in the tree. But I just singled it down to delta-3 carrying just for this. I wanted to tell a smaller story, and I didn't want to, like, go out into all my data because I have a lot of data that I have to analyze. So this is about how far I've gotten in the data analysis. So I figured it was a good one for that reason.
Yeah, it's a good project for a long thesis.
I know, totally, yeah, exactly. The stats are going to take me a while. Yeah.
And it catch how many different programs plantations you've worked at. Do all these families occur at multiple sites, and do you see the same trend on which ones have lower or high, whatever tree you were looking at, somewhere among the plantations?
So the question was, is if the families have similar trends at the different sites that I tested? And yes, they did. I just showed the overall because I lumped them together because when I pulled them out by site, which I only had two sites, although the original work was based on another third site, they showed pretty much the same trend. So for the purpose of this talk, I just kind of lumped them together. Yeah. Yes?
I missed why there, these families aren't being killed by mountain pine beetles. because they were selected to begin with to be resistant, or are they escaping the outbreak somehow?
So the question was why these families aren't being killed by mountain pine beetle. And many of these families are being killed by mountain pine beetle. This work originated from an initial study that was done in a third site where they went in and had all these different tree families set up in there, and they categorized them from tolerance to non-tolerance of mountain pine beetle. And then those tree families, we went and did another study in the two sites I was using to determine if the trees were in good shape and if they had already other problems in them. And then we pulled out 49 families where there was enough trees to pull out significant values later on. Many of these tree families have got completely slaughtered in the last 2 years, while other ones maybe have a lower percentage of how many have gotten killed, and some tree families even have no trees killed. One thing to remember about my trees as well is they're only 20 years old in these stands, and still many of the families are getting completely wiped out, which is something that hasn't really been seen too much in lodgepole pine with mountain pine beetle attack, is young trees being killed.
I have one more question.
Yeah. I actually haven't looked at that yet. Yeah, I haven't gotten around to that yet. I do have the total numbers for total monoterpenes as well as diterpenes, stuff like that. I haven't looked at the ratio of how much is delta-3 carrying.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.